Hello, Mind Bloomers! This is Mind Bloom, the safe space at the intersection of mental health advocacy and breast cancer awareness. Mind Bloom is your podcast. Come back weekly and listen to my guests as they reflect on their close encounters with emotional disorders and breast cancer. Not an easy task, but we promise to make your mind bloom. Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Marina G, your host, and this is Mind Bloom. Please remember, the content provided by Mind Bloom is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of any content referenced or authored by Mind Bloom You. Hello, guys. Hello. Here's another episode of Mind Bloom. How is everyone doing today? Today it's quite foggy, rainy here in New York City, but we make do. We always do. This is episode 42nd of Mind Bloom, and I am so glad to see all of you coming, pouring in. I am recording live on my audio platform, so this episode is going to be published later tonight so that it's available to all of you tomorrow first thing in the morning. And here you are keeping me company. Hello, Kirsten. Hello, L, the Black Blissful Mind. Hello, all of you. I wanted to welcome you. You know, Mind Bloom is a podcast on mental health, all things wellness and well-being. It's also a platform that raises awareness for breast cancer, and I am so, so happy to have you here today. So, a few things I wanted to say, just a little bit of plumbing before we get started. I have this week, I'm not going to tell you today, but I have bunch of good news for you this week. Yes, they're good news. And like I said, I'm not going to say it right away. You might have to wait a couple of days. But what I am going to challenge you to do is to try and guess what the good news can be or what the good news relate to. So even if you can't, which is very, very hard to guess what it is. Maybe if you have like an idea, you can just share it right now or share it in the comments later after I publish this live or at the website, on my website, mindbloomyou.com, or here on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, let me think, TikTok, LinkedIn, all the things, Mind Bloom You. Oh, and YouTube as well, Mind Bloom. So this piece of news, what could it be? Could it be something that has to do with a budding relationship? Could it be something that has to do with, let's say, a new pet other than Bianca? Ooh, I don't know how she would like that. Could it be something related to a big move, perhaps a business venture? Or a new step in the Mind Bloom big scheme of things. All of this could be so many things. A new job? Huh, perhaps. So, guys, let me know in the comments. I will be spreading little inklings and little tips throughout the week, and I can't wait to see who's gonna guess. And also, I can't wait to let you know what the news is. All right, so that is the first piece. The second piece, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about false support systems. This is something that came to my understanding just the other day. I'd heard, same as everybody else, I had heard of support systems and how important they are for our well-being. And they could be, they could range from, you know, our close family and relatives to our good friends, even our friends here on social media. It could also be your doctor, it could be your therapist, your pastor, your priest. So many possibilities. But what I had not heard of was false support systems up until last week, perhaps. And actually, that makes a lot of sense. It's similar to that notion of empathy fails. Have you ever noticed that perhaps you're sharing something with someone you really like and with someone you really feel comfortable with and someone you trust and that you think trusts you? Have you ever trusted in someone, confided in someone, and then get in response of your sharing an empathy fail, which again is a response that could be something like, oh, but well, what do you mean you're tired? You have three kids, you're tired. Well, yeah, but you got those kids, didn't you? What are you complaining about? It could be something like that. I'm sure we've all experienced it here and there. Or a response, an empathy fail, could be something like, what do you mean you don't like Dallas, Texas? You just moved there. You made that decision. I told you not to, didn't I? Remember? But hey, you wanted to do it all along. So what are you complaining about now? That would be another example of an empathy fail. And again, and I mentioned Dallas, Texas for no reason. It's just the first city and state that came to my mind. I'm sure it's beautiful. So that would be an empathy fail. And I think those come mainly from our false support system. So we surround ourselves by the people we love, the people we trust, the people we want to run to tell the first news, you know, you're going to have a baby, you're moving into a new city, you met someone and this person means a lot to you, you got a new job. And this system, this support system, may be false. It may really not be the help and the safety that you need at this particular time in your life. And, you know, this is not a blaming game. It's not that the other person or the other people in this false support system are ill-intended or that they mean something to harm you. It's just that they may not be aligned with your needs. They may be going through some challenges of their own, some mental, emotional, financial challenges of their own, and their response to you may really not be what you need, what you expected even, so it doesn't meet your expectations. And perhaps it will, you know, give you second thoughts. It will make you question yourself and your decisions. Or perhaps you were going to that person for help in making a decision and you feel now sidetracked and that your trust has been broken. So tell me, guys, in the who are watching now live, and remember, this is all being recorded and it's going to be on the podcast episode 42nd of Mind Bloom tomorrow, first thing in the morning, Tuesday morning. Tell me, you guys, if you are watching this now, and I know a couple of you are, what are your thoughts? Have you ever come across this expression, both empathy fail or false support system? And how has it been expressed in your life? How has it happened in your life? I'm going to give you a quick example. This weekend, I was sharing with someone that I consider part of my support system, but who actually may not be part of my healthy true and truthful support system. And I was sharing my good news, the news that this piece of news that I want to tell you more of throughout the week. And I was met with so much resistance, with so much aggression, I want to say, aggression, verbal aggression, and emotional aggression and violence. I understand that this reaction may have come from a place of loneliness that this person is perhaps now feeling, or they are themselves not happy with the circumstances of their lives, of their life. But for now, what it means is that this empathy fail that I just came across this weekend was not what I needed. It was not what I expected, and it was not what I needed. And I was not mad. I was very surprised and glad to see that I reacted very well to this. I went for a walk right after because I felt a bit flustered, like immediately, once the phone call ended. But I went for a walk. I thought about things. I also thought about sharing about that episode here. And I felt better. It's just that we need to sometimes make strides towards what makes us feel better. And I am certain of my decision. I am certain that this news is good news. And I have to detach myself. We talk so much about letting go. I have to let go of what other people think, of other people's opinions. They may not be ill-intended again, but they may also, at least for a few months, may not be granted the luxury of being part of our support system. And I mentioned just now that they reacted to my breaking the news, and that is the key word here. They reacted. They don't have to react. They don't have to interject. They don't have to give their opinion. They even mentioned the word advice. They don't have to give advice unless I requested it. They only needed to listen. And they needed at that point to congratulate me. They needed to say, I'm with you. It's going to be tough because it's a big change in your life. But I'm with you, and we can talk anytime, day or night, that you need me. And instead, I got this huge empathy fail, this feeling that this person was not at all resonating with what I was saying, and they were not at all on my court. They were not with me. And again, I ask you guys, have you ever felt this way? Have you ever felt that you were eager to share a piece of news and with someone you love, someone you trust, someone you believe is part of your support system, and all of a sudden you're met with aggression or disdain or resentment? I don't even know what that emotion really is or entails. But have you ever? So this was just a little tidbit of food for thought that I wanted to leave with you this week. Again, the episode is being recorded and it's going to go live tomorrow, first thing in the morning, every Tuesday. This is episode 42nd of Mind Bloom, and I'm so happy that you're here with me. Wherever you are in the world, you're here with me in my little corner recording Mind Bloom. We always talk about mental health, we always talk about breast cancer, and you're always invited to show up, to say hi, to stick around. please send me an email if you have any questions to info@mindbloomyou.com. Check out my website, it's mindbloomyou.com. Check the YouTube channel, it's Mindbloom. And check all things social media. Let me see, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok. I think that's it. @MindBloomYou. I look forward to seeing you again. I come live every Monday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, to record new episodes of Mind Bloom just for you. And if you want to be a guest or do a live here on Instagram, please reach out. Please reach out in the in my DMs. They're always open, or in the comments, anywhere. I'm always ready to meeting new amazing people and to broaden and grow my support system. Not my false support system, but my support system. Bye-bye. I love you all. Thank you so much. My guest today is Erin Kroniken. Erin is an actor. She's also a director and a producer. She likes to call it the triple whammy. She is also the co-artistic director of The Seeing Place. Erin is an activist, a metastatic breast cancer thriver, a champion of creativity, freedom, and tasty bourbon. Erin is also a pleasure to speak with. She is a soul of light and love and compassion. And I am so happy to bring her to you today. So listen on. My engaging conversation with Erin is right after this. And welcome to Mind Bloom.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. We've been talking for the last few weeks, sharing content and excitement, I guess. Yeah, and I was looking forward to speaking with you, to meeting you, really. So I'm so happy that you're here on Mind Bloom. Yeah. So tell me, Erin, I know you're looking forward to this question. What makes your mind bloom?
My best answer to that is creativity. When I'm around a creative person or artwork or anything that was created with love and innovation, I my mind just expands and I get very, very inspired. I remember there was once a store I used to go to that had all of these artisan pieces of jewelry and artwork and clothing and things that were individually curated by the owner of the store. And I would just walk in and my body would relax and I would just get all these wonderful ideas just by browsing. So yeah, anytime I'm around creativity, it's really inspiring to me.
And it's great because you turned that into your job, I guess, your career. You're a performer, you're a director as well.
Yes.
And a producer, correct me.
Yes, I am. That is correct. I do all of the above.
You have the triple whammy.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit more. And especially now, I mean, during, obviously, we know everything is shut down. So what is a performer in New York City doing these days?
Well, a lot of people are not doing a whole lot. I'm very lucky because I run a theater company called The Seeing Place, and we have been creating content online, which I know has a lot of, some people are like, but theater online, it's not the same thing. But as artists, you know, I think especially during something like a pandemic, which is just so difficult to deal with, Artists usually manage their stress and their anxiety or whatever they might be dealing with by creating. And if you shut down the creative engine, then it makes it even more difficult to deal with. So we've been creating through that. I've been an actor almost my whole life. I did my first play when I was 9 and have my theater degree and moved to New York in 2005 to pursue acting. And so, you know, I've just been working professionally ever since. And the theater company is just one part of what I do. I try to perform outside of the company as well to try to bring the work that I do in the theater company out into the world and then bring what I learn from those experiences back into the theater company.
Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful that you have not stopped, you and your company, and that artists around the world haven't stopped, really, because not only is it an escape for them to use their creativity as in these times, but it's an escape for us consumers as well. So what brought us here today, unfortunately, is this terrible, terrible thing, breast cancer, and yeah, and also mental illness a little bit. And we were earlier talking about a shared intimate relationship with anxiety, perhaps panic as well. So let's talk a little bit more about that, if you would like. Tell us about your what breast cancer diagnosis you have, and where did that start? Where did your story start?
Okay. Well, my story started in 2015. Well, really, it started a little bit earlier than that. I had been having this weird pain in my left breast. It was just like this little twinge of pain, and it wasn't happening all the time. And I went to my OBGYN, and they did a breast exam and said, you know, you're too young. This is not anything. You have no family history. But if it doesn't go away, you know, come back and see us again. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and everywhere you look online, it says, you know, you have breast pain, they say it's not cancer because cancer doesn't cause pain. So I just sort of ignored it, but it started getting a little more frequent as 2015 went on. And my aunt, who was much older, got diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of about 60. I think she was 66, which is still not considered to be family history. That's just considered to be one of those things that happens. I started getting a little more concerned about it. And then one day I was having more pain than normal, and I kind of felt around and I noticed this sort of indentation in my breast. It was almost as if something was like sucking my skin from the inside. But it was just one spot, one little spot. Now I've learned since then that they call that a dimple. And that's when like my blood froze and I realized, oh, there's something really wrong here. And I knew immediately it was cancer. So of course I go through the process of getting a mammogram, a diagnostic mammogram, which did not find any cancer.
Yeah.
Then I did an ultrasound, which did find some mass. They didn't know what it was, of course. And then I got the biopsy, which then confirmed that I had stage 2B breast cancer. And, you know, I was, I'm in my, you know, in my 30s, and I'm like, what is this? I don't have anybody in my family who has had any cancer this young at all, nowhere on either side. So I did the traditional route of chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, and was declared cancer-free and done with my treatment in early 2016. And then in late 2018, I, by complete happenstance, I got pneumonia, and they happened to see on the x-ray from the pneumonia that I had a little spot that had not been seen before in my left breast. But again, they're like, well, you're a cancer survivor, but most likely that's just from surgery. That's probably just scar tissue. You're probably fine. Well, nope, it was a recurrence of breast cancer. And then they did a PET scan and found that it had spread to my bones and also my lungs. So then officially in November of 2018, I was diagnosed as stage 4 or metastatic breast cancer patient. Since then, it has also spread to my brain. Luckily, I've had really great courses of radiation that have been able to deal with that. And I'm on a systemic chemotherapy that I take 3 times a month. I'm in the hospital 3 times a month getting the infusions. And so that is all managed right now. So I'm feeling fairly healthy, but similar to most patients, I live from scan to scan, and you just have no idea what's going to happen until you get tested again, you know.
Wow. The amount of stories I hear of people being dismissed, that they're too young, that there's no history in the family, it's overwhelming. I'm glad you still push through, and the idea of that your aunt having a diagnosis is not also related, it strikes home immensely, because that's what I hear almost day in, day out, here with the podcast. So it's telling that it's we're being diagnosed earlier and earlier. And the causes, I mean, you can't really pinpoint one thing or another thing.
No, there's nothing to point to. There's nothing. The psychologist will tell you when you go to get mental health treatment for this, the first thing they'll say is like, you didn't do anything to cause this. It's most likely, you know, this is my words now, it's most likely something environmental. It's most likely something along the way that we put in our body, whether it is the environment with pesticides or whether it is the food we're eating. But it's not like I drank too much milk.
Yeah.
And therefore, now I have cancer. This is nothing that these patients have done. You know, it's not you didn't exercise enough or you used too much deodorant, you know, that has aluminum in it or whatever it is. It's a systemic problem, and it's just getting worse and worse. And hopefully there is some money going into research to figure out, is it just genetic markers that make people predisposed to this? You know, what is it? Because yeah. It's terrifying.
I'm so thankful for you for saying that it's not your fault and it's not your deodorant, your milk, the beef, whatever it is that you ate, because there's this culture of putting, you know, making you feel guilty and making you feel ashamed, especially, I would say, breast cancer, given it's such an area, an intimate area of the woman's body, and it's not something that... I don't mean to say that it's not breast cancer is not in men. I just mean that they don't have the actual area in their bodies that is so connected with femininity, and so it may be the shame and the guilt may come also from the patriarchy. But anyway,
yeah, it's weird to talk about your breasts in such a clinical way, to say that because now all of a sudden I'm like, are you looking at my breasts? Are you wondering if they're fake? Are you wondering if they're real? You know, and how it then impacts your sexuality, because that is also a big component of it too, the femininity and the sexuality, which are really two different things, right?
Yeah, your self-image. I mean, everything gets changes, and yeah. You're left to your own resources really to figure it out. Luckily you also have therapy and psychological help, but you know, not everyone does, and sometimes people even choose not to. So I'm glad you are being supported in the ways you feel you need to be supported. So that's great. Did you have a double mastectomy in the first?
No, I had a lumpectomy because the tumor was relatively small. Interestingly, they thought it was much smaller than it ended up being when they went in. So they thought they had, based on the scans, they had thought that it was 9 millimeters, so very small. So just under a centimeter, and it turned out that it was 2.3 centimeters. So before I went into surgery, I was considered to be stage 1A, and then I came out of surgery stage 2B, because it had also traveled to one lymph node.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge shock for me. How could they not see that from the scans? I'm not sure. I do know that it was embedded and kind of wrapped around a nerve, which is why I had pain, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it was why that my skin was puckering as well, mm-hmm. because it was impacting the nerves in the area.
And they didn't consider a mastectomy No,
they said that there just wasn't any reason to believe that that was going to make any bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because of the size of the tumor and the fact that it had not spread to more lymph nodes. It certainly was something they offered, but they didn't think that that was necessary. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Another point I wanted to touch on is the fact that it's out there and it's true that pain is not really a symptom, they say, of breast cancer. Don't panic. It's probably just the time of the month. It's fine. And again, I had another someone I interviewed here and we became good friends. She was diagnosed with DCIS, and for about a year, maybe more, she complained of pain. Mm-hmm. And it was finally when, and nothing else, no other symptoms. And it was finally so much insistence from her that and she was 34 at the time, mm-hmm. that the doctors or the OBGYN at the time was like, oh, okay, let's do a mammogram, let's do an ultrasound. But it's nothing. Yeah, well, now she lost a breast.
Yeah, you just have to know your body enough. Like, I just knew it just felt weird, and it was in one specific spot. Mm. It was never on the other side of my body. It was always in one spot. Mm. And it seemed positional. So if I slept in a specific position, I would notice the pain more than not, which also made me think. But another way that you need to advocate for yourself is, they didn't see it on the mammogram.
Yeah.
So not only did I helped guide them to the pain with the wand of the ultrasound. I was like, here it is. Just keep pushing and I'll tell you when I feel pain, and then really go into that section because that's where I'm feeling it. Because otherwise they were thinking I was just crazy. You know, when you're in your 30s and you're like, I'm having pain in my breast, they're not thinking cancer. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, oh, you have dense breasts, or you're in that part of your cycle that month, and that's why you have pain. Yeah. But I'd never had tender breasts with my cycle. Mm-hmm. So.
And besides, tender breasts are all around.
Yes.
You kind of know, and you know, it feels heavier. It feels, it's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's everywhere. Whereas, as you're mentioning, it's a very specific point. And my friend that I was telling you about, it's the same thing. She could exactly pinpoint where it was. And it's funny that you were guiding them with the wand. And because my friend, the first biopsy, they didn't find it. They didn't find anything. Turns out it was 6 centimeters.
Oh my gosh.
They did not find it.
Yeah, and that's, for me, mine was right against the chest wall, and I'm already small-breasted, so they couldn't see it with the mammogram. There was no way to get close enough to the chest wall, mm-hmm. and so you had to use the ultrasound to get there. There would have been no way. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the same thing happened when I was re-diagnosed in 2018. They couldn't see it on the mammogram, so I showed them on my phone the results from the x-ray that I had from the other doctor's office and said, this is what the report says. So use this to guide you in the ultrasound.
Mm-hmm. So it was small again. That mass was small.
Hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And you got a second lumpectomy?
No. In fact, when I expected that when I went in, and first of all, once I found, so I found out that I had a local recurrence in October of 2018, and then they immediately scheduled me for a PET scan and said, let's do this PET scan. And I didn't meet with a doctor in between those times because there was really no point. Mm-hmm. So I found out that I was stage 4, and that's when we started planning. And basically what they said was, this particular office does not do mastectomies for people who are stage 4.
Yeah.
They said, it's already spread. Yeah. So instead, we're just going to treat it with chemotherapy. That was what my course of action was. And I was expecting to get a mastectomy. I was expecting it. So to find out that was not the case was one of the harder realities I had to face. I had now progressed so far that certain therapies were not advisable for me, that it was going to cause more of an issue for me than to just get it with chemotherapy. That they were not going to take my cancer out was just baffling to me. I understand it now that there's some distance with it, but that was really hard for me to take.
Yes, they prefer to keep you off the OR as much as possible because they don't want to compromise your body. That's already fighting the big battle. So
yeah, I mean, you go from being in early stages 0 to 3, where they're going to throw everything at you. They're looking for a cure. They're going to cure you. The minute you're stage 4, it's about maintenance.
Managing, yeah.
How do they manage your care? How do they make sure that they keep the cancer as small as possible for as long as possible and also give you quality of life at the same time? And that is very sobering as well, because you're in it's a completely different kind of thing. You know, the chemos are different. I think they can be hard, just as hard for a lot of people. Mine so far, I'm still on my first round of treatment, which for stage 4 is, I've been on it for almost 2 years now. And it's still working.
It's working.
That is not common.
That's good.
Most treatments work for about 6 to 9 months, and then you have to switch to a new treatment because the cancer gets acclimated. So I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting till the next scan. And, every time I wait, I think, okay, this is going to be the time when I'm going to get the bad news that we have to move to another modality or new chemotherapy regimen. So far I've been very lucky, but
because with the new chemo comes new side effects, and your body needs to get accustomed again. And
exactly. So I'm very lucky that this current chemo regimen does not cause hair loss. That is one of the most difficult things to deal with cancer. I know it sounds silly when you're thinking about saving your own life, but especially as an actor, so my body is my instrument, and to not have hair is and it's not just the hair on your head, it's the eyebrows and eyelashes and every stitch of body hair that you if you don't have nose hairs, your nose runs like crazy. No one thinks about that. You know, you are more prone to ear infections because you don't have ear hairs. I mean, it's just weird stuff like that we don't think about.
Mm-mm. And your eyebrows as an actress, as an actor, are also so important for expression. So,
exactly. So you get very good at drawing on using magnetic, eyelashes and.
Oh, wow. Let's talk a little bit about community, maybe. you know, a support system, a good support system is crucial. I would imagine, you know, it is for all of us, for myself as well. Therapy, psychiatry, meds, whatever it is. Who are your people, let's say?
Well, first and foremost, I have an amazing therapist who I see 3 days a week through a pretty intense psychotherapy program. And so that has been really helpful. I'm also seeing a psychiatrist so that I can have medications for, mostly I deal with generalized anxiety disorder. That's the major thing that I deal with. But I also have a major depressive disorder as well. For me, it's my anxiety is what my mind created to try to deal with depression. So interestingly, when I started dealing with the anxiety, my depression came up even further. When the doctors realized, oh, there's some major depression here. Okay. And that's, but what is really on the surface is my anxiety. And that's what I, so I take medication for both of those things. So I'm well managed by a team. And then in terms of kind of people, I find that social media has been very helpful. There are some wonderful people that you can follow via different kinds of hashtags on Instagram. And then there are a bunch of different focused groups on Facebook. So I'm a member of probably 4 or 5 different metastatic breast cancer groups on Facebook. It's interesting because we need our own groups because it's a very specialized thing to deal with. And we scare the crap out of people who are, you know, stages 0 to 3, because no one wants to think about being stage 4. So I pretty much stay out of the general breast cancer and focus on the ones that are closer to me. And then my subtype of breast cancer is triple negative. And so that's its own special group because we don't have any sense of what causes our cancer. We're estrogen negative, we're progesterone negative, and we're HER2 negative, and therefore we're negative for all three of those things. And that makes it super frustrating to try to find treatments that'll work. And it means that our cancer is more deadly at the stage 4 level than the others are. So that's...
Oh, because there's less treatment options?
Exactly. So like there's no tamoxifen that
exactly.
I can on for 5 years. There's no Herceptin, which is for those with HER2 positive cancers. And I also, unfortunately, am negative for PD-L1, which is the where immunotherapy would be appropriate.
I see.
So I'm negative for like so many things. But what I'm on right now, for anybody who wants to know, I'm on a mix of carboplatin and gemcitabine. And those are the two chemotherapeutic agents that I'm on that I'm doing relatively well on. I have very low blood counts. That's the major side effect that I face. But to get back to your question, I mean, it's related to support systems. I know that here in New York City, there's a wonderful organization called Gilda's Club.
Yes.
Which is, unfortunately, their main courses are closed, or their support groups are closed right now due to COVID, but they provide so much support for people who are living with cancer and their caregivers as well. And I'm sure that people in other cities, that there are organizations like that. You just have to call up the hospitals and they'll tell you what those different organizations are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Gilda's Club definitely is an important aspect for the Breasties community. And I'm going to give a big shout out to my friends at our NBC Life podcast and Instagram and Twitter. They are doing an incredible job for those with diagnosed with MBC, but also anybody, caregivers, and just anybody, because you don't know. You don't know when it's going to knock on your door.
Exactly. And you need to have those support systems in place, or at least knowing where to go. because I didn't know.
Before we wrap up, is there a message, something you'd like to leave with our listeners at home?
Yeah, I think that you want to give yourself space for whatever feelings that you're having related to your own mental health, related to any possible diagnoses that you might have, related to any of the, you know, self breast exams that you might do or the mammograms you might have done, and just acknowledge those feelings and don't push them away. And because I think that the more that we can talk about our fears, the more we can normalize the fact that we are going in, you know, we're going in once a year for cervical cancer screenings. We're going in, we're getting mammograms even later and later and later, because now I think they're recommending not even doing them until you're 50. It's just way too late, especially with as many people that are being diagnosed early on. And don't be afraid to advocate for yourself, because you are the only one who knows your body. And consider that a lot of times doctors are used to hearing people kind of push for things that they don't really need. And so they might, even if you're pushing for it, they might even say you don't really need it, like they did with me. I said I had pain, and they said, well, you know, come back if it keeps going. And who knows what would have happened if my doctor had said, holy moly, you're having pain? Well, that's odd. Let's figure out what that pain is. Let's give you the tests. What would have happened then? I probably would have been stage zero. Would I have maybe gotten everything done so early that I never would have become stage four? One will never know. So just advocate for yourself as much as you can. Don't be afraid to push. They're used to it and they appreciate it. The doctors are not magic people. They are human beings just like we are, and they rely on our feedback to guide their knowledge.
Yes. So please self-advocate. Do your annual exams.
Yeah. Absolutely. Don't miss them.
Well, thank you so much, Erin. This is such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate you so much.